Welcome to Heartland Darkland. I'm Cassie.
And I'm Shannon.
Thank you for joining us yet again. We appreciate you.
Yes, we totally do.
Little disclaimer right off the bat. Our usual recording, I don't know what happened. It's not working. So we're using something else this time. So if the sound quality is a little different, bear with us. We're yet again trying to figure out recording stuff.
And we're not great with technology, so...
We're really not. Listen, we've spent 2 hours already trying to get our audio figured out. We've come down to this now.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to continue to keep working on it.
Yeah. We don't have the patience today to figure it out. And we think that this is doable.
This is doable. And also, we don't have the time, unless we want to miss a week for the podcast, to get anything else figured out. Yeah. So we're going with this. We think it's going to be okay. But we just want to let you know, if you think it sounds a little different, that's why.
And our standard is higher than this, and the quality will be better, hopefully, from here on out.
Yeah.
So, but thanks for listening anyway.
Listen, this is still better than our very first episode.
Oh, man. We've come a long ways. And it's only been, this is what, week four?
Yeah. So.
Okay.
I think that's the main thing we're going to talk about in the beginning here.
That's all we got.
So I'm going to dive right in.
Let's do it.
We are in Merrill, Michigan this week. There are at least two houses here with reported hauntings. Both are on the same road, which is Dice Road.
That sounds dicey. Dice, wow. Right?
Yeah, okay. No, I get it.
Pretty dicey.
Total dad joke.
I know. Yeah, disclaimer also, my jokes suck.
Okay, supposedly the cemetery is also haunted. And a bridge that's on this road. But I didn't find a lot of information about those, so I'll kind of briefly touch on those at the end.
Sure.
Now, this area is actually on the outskirts of Merrill, in this what used to be a community called Iva. This community was established in 1851. But the general store had been there since 1845. Now, this is where the farmers and others would receive their mail until, I don't know, the head honcho at the mail place. I can't think of what they're called. But the head honcho at the mail place was like, hey, you're not a real town. So we can't keep delivering to you unless you become a town. So the guy who owned the general store was like, all right, well, we're going to make it a town. And it's called Iva. I want to say they said it was his mother's name. Something like that. So this town is called Iva. Now, the general store is the only remaining structure from what used to be Iva. In 1873, a smallpox epidemic spread through Iva. And because of how contagious the disease was at the time, because it's 1873 and medical was not great.
Mm-hmm.
They would burn down the houses of the infected to try to stop the spread.
Oh. With the people, not like, they would just...
They would burn down the house. So I'll kind of come back. Give me a second.
Okay, yeah.
Because they would also board people up in their homes in a forced quarantine. So like they would nail their doors and windows shut. Now, where I get this information from is I watched an episode, which I'll come into later. So on the Travel Channel, there was a show called A Haunting in the Heartland, something like that. I have it later in my notes, I'll say for sure. And that was hosted by a guy named Steven Pro. Well, his rapper name is Prozac. He's a Michigan rapper.
Mm. Prozac?
Yeah.
Like the drug.
Like the drug. Okay. Yes. Uh-huh. So... He had the show, but before the show, he actually had two documentaries. It was A Haunting on Dice Road, Hell House, which is actually going to be the second house I talk about.
I feel like I've heard of that.
And then, probably because I told you.
Yeah. That's fair.
And then the second one is A Haunting on Dice Road. I can't remember the name. I have it again here again.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'll link to those. If you have Amazon Prime, you can watch those two documentaries, which they were pretty interesting. I'm not going to lie to you. The Travel Channel show was okay. I watched that one first, but it was just like a very, very quick summation of the two documentaries. So honestly, if you're going to go watch something, I'd watch the documentaries. So anyways, back to this general store. Well, in the documentary, the guy, when he finds out about the why Iva's not around anymore, he was like, could they have burned down the houses with people in them?
Like, questioning it?
He was questioning it. It felt like it was more of, like, a thrill. Like, he wanted to add something to the show. And, I mean, the guy was like, I mean, it's possible, I guess.
You wouldn't really know, I mean, if it was that old.
Are they going to be like, hey, so we murdered this family?
We just didn't want that to spread. That'd be like killing people with COVID here. Can you imagine?
Right.
Like,
so, who knows what happened? Long story short, all the houses were burned down. Mm-hmm. So now, before the general store was purchased, because it's then turned into a home.
Okay.
In 2009, police got a call about possible prowlers in the store. A young man was walking his dog, and he said he heard two men talking and laughing inside. Yet, when the police arrived, they didn't see anyone. They didn't even show signs of anyone having been in there.
And this is when it was a house?
This, at this point, it's not anything.
But it had become a house after a store, is that what you said?
Yeah, so it was a general store and it was turned into a house.
And now it's nothing.
And now it's just there.
Broken
or, yeah. Okay. So I think it was turned into a house and then it was empty for a long time until these other people buy it. So they got that call. They don't see anyone. The young man was very adamant. He was like, I swear to you, I heard people in there. And then about a year later, the police actually received two separate calls about people seeing what appeared to be candlelights in the window of the store. And once again, when they arrived, there was nothing. So many in town believe that it's the spirits of the farmers who used to congregate there when they were checking their mail or picking up supplies. A lot of times this is where they came to socialize because you're out in the farms and that's your social hour. So now, Mike and Celeste Midcalf bought the general store turned home in 2009, and once they moved in, they immediately started on renovations because this place is very run down. They knew it was going to need a lot of work, but this is where they wanted to move into and retire. Like, this was gonna be it. But they noticed activity right away. Mike said on one occasion his power saw and the lights in the room he was in went out while he was working. And he knew the wiring was old and faulty, but even after he had this fixed, it would still happen. Oh. He would also feel someone or something cold brush up against him. And as he continued to work, the activity continued and worsened. So as he continued to try to change and remodel, I'm not even remodel, because as we'll come to later, these people are very much into antiques. Mm-hmm. So they like that old look. So it's just trying to renovate this house.
Make it livable.
Make it livable. You know, some areas have safety hazards. So, but the activity just continues. So another instance was when the couple were laying in bed, they heard the washing machine start up downstairs. And neither one of them were doing laundry. So when the husband, Mike, went down to investigate, it was filling with water. Like, someone had started the washer.
Okay.
And they weren't the only ones in the home when they bought it. Their son, Josh, lived with them as well, which I'm not exactly sure how old he was at this time, but he makes a remark about when he's, like, 17 or so, some stuff happening. So I don't know if this was, like, a right-away thing. So he's probably around 17 to 18 when these happens. So one instance he had was also when he was in the laundry room to wash his uniform. For work, the door behind him started rattling as if someone was trying to get in.
Mm-mm.
And so he felt...
I would run so fast.
Oh, that's what he did. Oh, okay. He left it.
I'm smart.
He left immediately and he was like, I don't even care. Like, he left the water running at that point.
Yeah.
Different incident. This isn't why his parents heard it.
Yeah. Yeah. Different story.
Two separate things. But there was another time when he went to the kitchen to get a snack before bed. He said he felt like when he turned around to leave the kitchen, like he couldn't leave. And he said, I think it's like the living room you can see from the kitchen. He said he noticed like roiling black smoke. So he was so scared he couldn't even call out for his parents. He said he couldn't get his voice to work. So he slept on this skinny little counter in the kitchen. Gosh.
Seriously?
Yeah. Which I was thinking during this, like, I get it. You're scared and you're a teenager. I'm like, why wouldn't you just sleep on the floor? There's so right. much more room.
And how can you even sleep if you were that scared, honestly?
I mean, eventually you're just so tired, you probably pass out.
I mean.
But so his parents, yeah. you know, come down in the morning. And when he explains it, like, his dad is like, oh, I feel so bad. I couldn't be there for my son and stuff. So that, I mean, for him was really, which, I mean, that's terrifying. Yeah.
Yeah.
So then there is Mike and Celeste's granddaughter, which would be Josh's daughter. And her name is Ada Bell. So she heard footsteps coming. So Josh and Ada Bell live with them.
Okay.
There's never once any mention of the mom. And I didn't Google to try to figure out because right. I wasn't going to be nosy. Things happen.
Mm-hmm. That's enough.
She's yeah. yeah. So she's lived there since she was a baby, I think, it sounds like. So anyways, I think when she's about 7, this is when this happens, she heard footsteps coming up the stairs, and then she heard them come into her bedroom. And then she said she saw a tall man carrying a lantern. She said his face was obscured by black smoke. He walked into her room and came up.
Gives me goosebumps. Sorry, that's crazy.
He came into her room, walked up to her bed, and he got, like, right in her face.
How old was she at this time?
Around 7.
Oh, gosh. And kids like that age aren't going to, I mean, make that kind of stuff up, I don't think.
Well, I mean, it could be a nightmare. I mean, who knows? So they think it's a nightmare. But okay. Remember how you said before we started this, you weren't going to interrupt as much? Yep. It's fine.
It's hard. I know. It's super hard because it's, like, all the things you want to know. Yes, keep telling us.
So they think it's a nightmare until she mentioned that she had felt a burning on her neck. And when her dad, Josh, checks, there are 3 scratch marks behind her ear on her neck.
Oh.
And I'll try to post pictures of this. There's something else I'm going to post pictures from. I might actually have to take pictures of my TV from the documentary because some of them I've tried to look already online and it's hard to find. So she said that, you know, after he was done looking down at her, he walked into her closet. So this closet, we'll get into the setup of it a little bit more later, but this closet is one that the family dog always is trying to get at and, like, scratching at. Like, there's something in there that he wants to get to, like, in an aggressive way. Mm-hmm. Eventually, Adabelle's fear and discomfort grew so bad that Josh decided that they needed to move out of the home.
Yeah.
Which, obviously, the grandparents are sad and upset to see their granddaughter go. I think he got a new job, and so he completely relocated. I think he's in a completely new town now, too. So how I came across this, like I said, I watched a Travel Channel show called Haunted in the Heartland. And then there were the 2 documentaries, which is A Haunting on Dice Road, The Hell House, and A Haunting on Dice Road 2, Town of the Dead.
Okay.
And so they're done by Stephen Prozac Shippey. And Stephen is a documentary filmmaker, but also a rapper, like I said. And he actually grew up in this area, it sounded like. I don't know if it was this exact town, but he grew up near here, and he had his own personal paranormal experiences, and that's why he kind of got into paranormal investigation, because he wanted to help others like that. And I know one thing he mentioned was, like, Adabelle was the same age where he was when he first started having experiences, so he really wanted to try and figure this out. And actually how he kind of met the Midcalfs was at a premiere at a theater for the first documentary. They came up to him, introduced themselves, and, like, okay, so if you think their house is haunted, you need to come check out our house. And they told him all about it, and he was like, yes, I'm there.
Yeah.
So, like I said, I know that their house was technically the second documentary. I'm not going to lie, I found their case to be slightly more interesting. The other one is interesting in a different way. I feel like this documentary, though, caught a lot more paranormal activity while they were there than the other one did. So, I definitely recommend watching them. Like I said, avoid the TV show. I don't really think it was that great. But you can watch them on Amazon Prime if you have that. Or if you're tech savvy and you know how to find things on free sites.
Yep.
Not that I'm condoning or anything.
To each their own. You do you.
You watch wherever. So to start the investigation, the Midcalf couple walk Steve around the house and explain areas with the most activity. Of course, there's Adabelle's room and closet. And so her closet, this will come into play later, it's kind of weird. It's like her closet's actually almost like another like weird shaped hall room kind mm-hmm. of thing. And I think it's just because of how the store was changed, but it leads into another room.
Okay.
So that'll come into play later. So just remember that and I'll bring okay. it up again. And then the basement, of course, is another area where no one likes to go to. But like also, who likes to go into unfinished basements to begin
no,
with?
No.
They're creepy.
They're always haunted. Yeah. I mean, whether you think they are or not.
Listen,
like,
I'm almost, I'll be 34 in a couple weeks. It took me a long time to even be okay going into my own basement.
Yeah.
And it's finished. Okay.
Yeah. I was like, wait a minute.
There's something yeah. inherently creepy about basements.
I agree. All of our neighbor kids never want to play in the basement because they say it's scary. And I'm like, what is scary? Like here, but I think it's like with the unknown when you can't, I mean, like yeah. you can't see around corner, when you can't see a corner or just.
Your basement wouldn't be as scary to me, although kind of at night because you have a walkout basement.
Yeah, so walk-out see, that freaks me out. Yeah. That's the thing I don't like.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it creepy. And then always like the water heaters and
yes.
stuff. And I think those sounds, you know, like on Home Alone when he's
yes.
scared of the
yeah.
thingy. What was that? The furnace?
Listen, my room was in the basement my senior year of high school. And, well, we also had hauntings at my house.
Yes.
So
I remember some of those stories you yeah, told me.
Like my box of books that were in the middle of a shelf. Or not even a shelf. It was like we had a hot tub with a cover on it. And it was in the middle of the hot tub. And it got thrown across the room. But that's neither here nor there. I mean, yeah. we could do like a mini episode one day of just the haunted shit I've dealt with in my
yeah.
life.
And like, yeah. I think, yeah, we could both talk about stuff.
We could.
Our own stories that we have.
Yeah. Ooh, that could be. Okay.
That could be.
No, to ourselves.
Yeah. I'll write that down
later on.
Later,
we have it recorded. We're good.
Yep.
Okay. Anyways, sorry. So yep. the basement area, and it's an unfinished basement from the 1800s. So yeah, it's creepy. But there is actually one particular room in the basement that everyone hated going into so much that they removed everything they had stored in that room so they wouldn't have to go to it. And also, this basement, because of the repairs it needs, has like water on the floor and stuff. And
oh,
like
yeah.
wires hanging down.
Oh, that sounds super safe.
Oh, yeah, no, it's like as they're going, they're like, be careful for wires because we don't know if they're alive or not.
Okay.
Uh huh.
Well, that sounds great.
Yeah. So then there's another room, and they call this room the Doom Room.
Doom?
Yes,
okay.
Doom.
Okay.
And this room is actually at the back of the house, and it's actually near the basement stairs. So I don't know if there's just some negativeness there anyways, but they call it the Doom Room because whenever they're in there together for more than 15 minutes, they say they'll start arguing and becoming angry over nothing.
Weird.
Yeah. Which, I mean, they say some spirits
yeah.
can do that.
Yeah, influence
your emotions.
Yeah.
yeah. So then they also have their antiques display room, which this couple... huge collectors of antiques. When I say pretty much their house is just antiques that they bought and decorated, and they're all from estate sales. So I'm sorry, but anyone who is even kind of into paranormal knows antiques are some of the most haunted shit.
Oh yeah.
Especially if you're buying them from estate sales. Like, listen, people attach to those things so much.
I feel like those are always what the stories like come from, you know?
Right. Oh, they have all those like antique dolls. Like there's a whole thing on TikTok of people with haunted antique
Ew,
dolls.
Don't like that. Yep. Nope.
Yeah, no, it's weird.
Nope.
Yeah. So after going through the house with the owners, Stephen and his crew then set up infrared cameras throughout the 5,000 square foot house.
Yeah.
And there was an area which I don't know if it was like a barn or a garage, but there's some outdoor thing where they set up like a home base type thing, you know, where they had someone watching all of the cameras so they could tell them if there was anything they see while the others are exploring different parts of the house.
Mm-hmm.
And oh my goodness, the stuff they caught. Like, while people were in there, while people weren't in there, it was... There was one scene where I jumped a bit, too. Now, mind you, this is the episode I think I told you I finished watching one night. It was Wednesday night. And then I had to watch Golden Girls for a little bit because I, like, freaked myself out.
That stuff is legit scary. Like, when we talk about, like, murders, like, that's just, I mean, that's scary too, but it's a different kind. Like, that you can do things to hopefully prevent being attacked or whatever. Mean,
yeah.
But this kind of stuff is
it's known, though. It's a human being.
Yeah. That's what I mean. This is, like, the unknown.
Yes.
And there's...
So, now, in the doom room, Steven and another person who was with him, investigator, had the radio turn on them on while they were in there. Like, it just came on. And so, when they turned around to look at the radio and turn it back off, they turned back to the wall behind them again, and these two pictures, like, they were portraits of people, were turned upside down.
Ooh, that's creepy.
Yeah. So, and then, of course, we're like, no one else. It was just them in there.
Right.
And another investigator was in a different room at the time being. And he had the audio recorder going. And he was asking the spirit questions. He was kind of antagonizing it a bit. Like, oh, you know, you're messing with a little girl, all that stuff. And this guy had talked before about how he'd been all over the world. Because he had been telling the rest of the crew, like, if it's a demonic thing, like, what not to do and all these things. Mm-hmm. So, as he's recording, he's playing back some of the stuff to see if he caught anything, and you can hear distinctly the word testing. Now, to me, a part of me is like, okay, but did it somehow overlap? Maybe it's the ghost, because I'm trying to think logical reasons.
Right.
Like, did something happen with the tape where, like, were they testing mm-hmm. on it, and then, like, testing to see if it worked, and then it came in? But he was talking to Steven again when he played it for Steven. I guess this guy, I want to say his name was Brian, him and Steven earlier before they got started have been talking about how, like, the spirits were probably going to try to test them. Mm. So they didn't know if it was the spirit saying, we're testing you. And then upstairs in the hallway, like, it's kind of like as you come up the stairs to the bedroom where Adabelle's bedroom is, there's, like, kind of like a little hallway walkway area. So another investigator sitting there in a chair, he has other points where they're, like, carrying around candles, like, the 1800s mm-hmm. and stuff like that, and, like, lanterns, and I don't get why, because they have flashlights.
Yeah. And phones that have the flashlights. Well, yeah.
But also, you could have, like, actual electrical lanterns,
right.
too,
yeah.
if that's what you needed. So I don't know if it was for ambiance or
jump.
What.
Yeah, I just think about that.
Because I just kept thinking about, like, what if that fell over and you caught this place on fire?
Well,
open flames.
Yeah. And you're stuck there with those spirits.
Right. So
forever.
So anyways, this guy's sitting there. He has this lantern, a flame lantern, sitting beside him. And he's asking the spirit to give signs of its presence. And then there's this loud crash. And this is the part that I jumped even to. And this poor man, you see him jump out of his seat and kind of go running away, which I totally would too.
Yeah.
And it's funny because there was obviously a camera on him, but he was alone up there.
Mm-hmm.
And he's talking to someone later. He's like, I know the camera caught me running away.
Yeah.
I'm like, dude, I would have too. But like this, I don't know exactly what it was, but something glass, it looked like it was thrown to the ground and like shattered.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Well, and that's enough. Anything loud like that makes you jump anyway, and then
right, even if it's a natural occurrence.
Yeah
but you're
add that extra element to it and
then in Adabelle's room and the whole closet, a few things happen in this area. So this investigator, who I think his name was Brian,
mm-hmm.
Who caught the testing word on the recorder, he's sitting in the closet again, kind of being antagonistic, which I never understand that approach when investigators take that.
Yeah,
I'm like, so you've heard this is a slightly malicious spirit, and you think let's anger it to really provoke it. I don't understand.
They would say, you know, some of them are nice and some are angry.
But this is one that has scratched a child
with that history, knowing that it's a mean.
So as he's sitting there, there are like these like shelves set up within this closet hallway thing. And he says they started rattling. At this point, I don't really notice that when I'm watching it.
Mm-hmm.
But then all of a sudden, he freaks out and jumps up. So he said that there was a hand that came out and tried to grab him from underneath one of these shelves.
Oh.
And after that, he refused to go back in there, which, yeah, I don't blame you.
You kind of did that to yourself, but yeah.
Yeah.
But still.
Yeah. That would be just horrifying. So, yeah, he's like, I'm not going back in there at all.
Hard pass.
Yeah. Later, Steven is in the room, And he goes and looks in the closet to look and see the shelves and stuff and the area where this other guy said the hand was coming up from. And while he's looking in there, you know, he kind of looks around, nothing's really going on. So he goes back into the bedroom, and while he's there, he notices, so on this dresser, there are all these dolls, like porcelain dolls, mm-hmm. which are inherently creepy too. Mm-hmm. And one is turned facing away from the bedroom while all the other ones are facing the room. And Steven's like, I hope. Steven's like, I'm fairly certain this doll was facing the other way. And so he had a camera in his hand as he was going through, and they show later, like, yes, it was. But as he's sitting there discussing how he thinks this doll was turned around while he was in the closet, you hear this jiggling of the closet door.
From the inside?
Yeah.
Or, like, inside just the closet. In general. Okay.
Yeah, so,
the
like...
door's jiggling.
Yes. So, Steven turns around quickly and tries to, like, open it, and he can't. So, he walks out of the bedroom into the other room, which can lead into it. Because uh-huh. I don't think there's an actual door then on that side. Mm-hmm. So, he goes to the other side, and he tries to open the door, and it won't open. And then he looks up. You know those, like, little hook locks that it's, like, you have the circular part on the door, and then it's just, like, a tiny little hook goes over, like, the simplest, mm-hmm. easiest to break locks?
Oh, yeah.
That's latched. That part gave me goosebumps. Oh, I was like...
And this is the outside, right?
It's inside the closet, which, why do you have a lock on that inside
of
the closet?
Oh, wait, okay, yeah, that's why I was... Well, why would you even have one on the outside of a closet, really, unless you had, like, a safe or valuables or something? Right. But, okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
But then again, too, depending, that could have been there from who knows how long ago since it had been a store. Maybe they put it there because they had done a ton of stuff to try to make Adabelle feel more comfortable in that room.
Yeah, that's fair.
So maybe that was something they did to try to make her feel better too. Ooh. I don't know, but this door is now locked.
Nope.
Yeah. And so later on too, you know, he decides that he's going to go into the attic. There's like,
gosh, that's another place.
So this is a thing. So the other guy originally was going to go up there. So of this closet, there's like this little attic space, but it's not attached to the rest of the attic. It's like its own one long rectangular area.
Okay.
So he's going into this attic of the closet. And while he's doing that, two other investigators are going to the big main attic. Well, so Steven, as he's up there, he's like, you know, he's not even fully in there. He's just standing on a ladder looking up because it's such a small area. You can see from either side. So there's a spot behind him that's like, in front of him is a longer portion of this area. Because like I said, it's like a rectangle. Uh-huh. And behind him is just like only a few feet.
Okay.
So he's facing the long part, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
With his back to the wall, essentially.
Yes, with his back.
Almost. I mean,
there's a few feet. Yeah. Yes.
But close enough that, like, you're right there.
Exactly.
Nothing can be behind you.
Yes. So he's standing in there. He's kind of talking. He's like, okay, well, if you're going to show yourself, like, now's your time. Now's the time to show yourself. And then all of a sudden, you see him kind of freak out and whip behind him. And then the camera gets shaky because he's like, I heard scratching. So he's like, it seems like he falls down the ladder.
Oh, my gosh.
And so later, another investigator comes in and is talking with him. He's sitting on the bed. He's like, I feel really dizzy. He's like, I heard scratching behind me. And as I went to go turn around, he's like, it felt like a pressure on my head, and then it started burning.
Weird.
So this guy's like, and Steven's been wearing a hat the whole time. He's bald. So the guy's like, take off your hat. There are scratches on his head, and they're bleeding a bit. They kind of make a bigger deal out of it. Like, oh, I mean, it's a big deal, but they're like, oh my God, you're bleeding. There's so much blood. And there really doesn't look like it is. Kind of like how
kids react when there's like a tiny, like a paper cut.
But he is scratched, and that's creepy.
Yeah, that part's creepy.
And so he's like, yeah, the guy was right. I shouldn't have gone up there. Well, as they're like playing back the video footage later of him going down, because he's like, I don't remember getting down the stairs and sitting on the bed.
Oh, weird.
You can hear this like growly voice saying, get out.
Oh my gosh. That totally gives me goosebumps.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And they're like pissing him off in there too by all the things. So like, yeah, get out.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Take your... They're being, well, not nice, but...
Well, but you know.
Here's your warning, go. Yeah.
Right. So now, gosh, that's happened, but these other two people are now up in this attic. And one guy kind of trips and falls, and it, because it's like you see the beams and it looks like the insulation like between them, you know, it's not like a finished attic, but you know, the insulation is either so old it kind of looks like dirt or whatever, but when the guy falls, his hand hits something in the insulation and they find a suitcase buried in it.
Oh my gosh.
So in the suitcase is a photo of a woman. It's like one of those old 1800s photos, an old dress, and a bunch of maps.
Wow.
So they take it down with them for everyone to look at, because they're like, it looks like these are maps of this area.
Okay, weird. I don't even know where my thought process is going or where this is going.
So they're now all sitting around the table together looking at these maps. And people are like, okay, so this is where we are. Like, yeah. And they're looking at things and they can point out where things in the area are or were. One of the maps, I think Steven had it, shows that where they are now used to be a cemetery.
Oh.
Yeah.
That makes a lot more sense.
Yes. So that's kind of what they think.
So this was built over a cemetery.
Yeah.
Oh.
And they had a psychic medium come in both documentaries. In this one, I don't really remember what she said too much. I don't know. I believe there are psychics out there. But sometimes there's something about when they're on shows that I just get
it's leery. Very Yeah, and it's a lot of extra dramatics and things like that.
Exactly. So I can't fully remember what she said about the place. Like, she wasn't in there a ton. So throughout all of this, they also catch several like ghost-like images in various parts of the house. Sometimes it's when no one's there. Sometimes it's like in the background, like you see, like it looks like someone walking behind another person.
Oh my gosh.
It's creepy. One thing a camera caught in Adabelle's room, this is one of the things that really creeped me out too, because it's towards the end, is the camera's in there, no one else is in there. It's pointed kind of towards her bed. It catches the whole room. The room's not very big. But you can see it. There's like an indent in her bed, like as if someone was sitting there. And then you see the bed rise.
Oh, like someone got
like
up.
Like someone got up.
Oh. And you, it shows that?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. That's like the Paranormal Activity movies. Like, I know. Those, I can't. I can't.
I watched the like first few. Aren't there like five of those
I don't
now?
Know. I mean, I think I've seen the first one and I was like, yeah, I'm good. I'm good.
Yeah.
I don't need to be reminded. Thanks.
So that's pretty much the second episode the second documentary.
Okay.
Now
I do want to actually watch them, so.
No, you should. They're good. It's really interesting because obviously they're giving more details and stuff too than I am.
Yeah.
So then the first documentary is about a house that's just 2 miles down the road, and it's 2 miles down the road in a straight line from this house.
Oh my gosh. Of course, though.
Yeah.
Of course it is.
Then it makes you wonder, like, is it on some sort of, like, axis point that, like, has a thinner veil?
Yeah.
You know? Because that's the one thing with our house. We always wondered if there was, like, some sort of, like, portal or something with our house that, like, made it easier for spirits. Because the activity was never consistent.
Yeah.
So it wasn't, it always seemed like maybe it was different spirits.
Yeah, well, and, like, the story you just told, it sounds like it's a lot of different things.
Because
you know what I mean?
Yeah, so because the guy in the hallway, because there's one that they start calling the watchman, the guy with the lantern.
Yeah.
Which to me, like, they were making it out like he was the one, like, trying to protect the little girl possibly from the thing in the closet. But I'm like, he's clearly the one who scratched her, though. I don't know.
Right.
Maybe some things are lost a little bit. I don't know.
Well, yeah. And if it was built on, like, a burial ground or cemetery or whatever,
right,
that could be
so many different.
It's not like it's just one specific family that's
mad
about
something. Well, and then not to mention the fact of all those antiques they have.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, because that was one other thing I forgot to put in here. While Steven's in the antique room, a music box starts playing.
Oh, my gosh.
And then this music box is sitting on, like, an old dresser with a mirror, and he sees behind him, which they show later, it looks like someone running behind him down into the basement.
Of course. The basement.
Yeah.
Like, this is kind of sidetracked, but related. If anyone has watched American Horror Story, the first season.
Oh, my God.
Murder House. So, it's very ironic because, well, and that's obviously, like, fictional, you know. But, they die. You die there. You're there forever.
Remember.
But they always are in the basement. Like, but they'll come up and you'll see things move. But it's, like, that's, like, you don't. If you go in the basement, like, you know it's game over.
Yeah.
You know?
And that was another thing. So, that they did go into that cellar room in the basement. that no one liked to go into. And they heard, like, it sounded like someone clicking. Like, there were some old glass bottles in there. It sounded like someone tapping on them. And they kind of go up to him like, oh, are one of these your favorites? And they start to turn around and you hear shatter. And one of the bottles, it's not like it just fell off the shelf. It, like, it was kind of like thrown off the shelf and shatters. And then Steven tries to pick up the broken glass and cuts himself.
You think?
Yeah.
That's when you just leave it and go. Because then watch you come down later and it's gone or something, you know?
But so yeah, that's that first house. So now the second house that's just 2 miles down the road in a straight line. So
crazy.
This was the house that he did the first documentary on. Okay. This is Hell House.
Okay.
So this is the Pomerang's house. And I might have heard the name a bunch of times. I'm pretty sure it's like Pomerang's.
Okay.
So that's their home. Now, this house was built by Harold and Mabel Pomerang in 1951. And then soon after, their sons, Dwayne and Terry, were born. Everything's fine and dandy and normal at this place.
Yeah, because it's a new house.
Yeah.
I mean, for no, like, history behind it other than theirs.
For like 20 years.
Okay.
So nothing's...
That's weird.
Yeah. Well, and we'll come into that later. Nothing happens in this house until June of 1974. And this is when the pounding starts. So it sounds... It's described as if someone is using a bat to hit the siding of the house.
Oh.
And this is like the... tin siding of the olden days.
Yeah.
And they always say it started at the east side of the house, which comes into play later too. And it's a constant pounding. So Harold calls the police thinking someone's a prowler. The police come, they search the perimeter and find no evidence that anyone's been there.
And that would do some damage if they were hitting it that hard.
Right.
Okay.
Now, this continues every single night for 6 months.
And did it say how long it would last, or was it like a very short thing?
It didn't really say. It sounded like it was a significant amount of time.
Enough that it would like disturb them.
Call.
Well, and that's if you're out.
So Harold called every single night, and some officers have heard the pounding themselves. Some didn't. There's a bunch of different things. There are all these police reports too. Police actually set up a perimeter all around the house one night. So when this pounding started, they could all just circle in and catch whoever had done it. Nothing. One of the sheriffs at the time who they interview in both these documentaries and in the show, he even talks about how one time when he showed up, he could kind of hear the pounding, but they had this like light, because they're out in the country. They had like one of those like light post things, you know, but a smaller like one. And the light exploded. He said as soon as he pulled up, the light exploded. Like he said it went out, but he heard some noise.
Like glass?
It was the shrapnel from the glass exploding, hitting his car.
Oh, hitting his car. Yeah. Oh, wow. Jeez.
So sometimes even when, so like no one was ever there. They never found anyone. They never, like there were times where it was, no, there were times when it was like raining and they were called out and there was no footprints.
That's really weird.
So one time when they were setting up like one of these perimeters, the police chief was in the house.
Okay.
And there are all these officers outside. So the police chief is in the house with the family, and the police have set up, the other police have set up a perimeter when the pounding starts, except the police outside can't hear it. It sounds like it's at the front door. So the police chief radios his sheriff and he said, are one of you at the door? And he's like, no, but they could hear the pounding through the radio.
Oh,
while his chief was talking, but they couldn't hear it outside.
So they, it was only, it was like an inside thing, but sounded to them like it was outside?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
But sometimes there are some police officers who say they've heard the pounding too. Like when they pull up, they can hear it. So they go searching. So it just kind of depends. So they brought in someone from the police department to check for any like electrical or noise making devices that could be causing this. Of course, they found none. At one point, they actually suspected the son, Terry, of being the cause. He was the youngest. They were like teenagers at this time. They actually made him come in for a polygraph test, which, okay, those aren't even reliable.
No, I
think those... You can't use them in the court of law. So but it's 1974, 1975.
Yeah.
So he passes it. And then the whole family ends up taking and passing polygraph tests, stating they have nothing to do with the noise and they wanted to know what it was. Like, they have no idea what it is.
They're just curious, too. That's
so
creepy.
Local police were brought in, state police were brought in, a mini FBI unit, gas and electric company was brought in, yeah. The telephone company was brought in.
That's excessive for just some banging.
I'm not even done.
Oh, gosh.
The churches and clergy were brought in, as well as Duke University and a parapsychologist from this place, from Duke University. They all get involved to try to find the cause of this unexplained phenomenon. And so Harold and Mabel are religious people, so they tried to have the house blessed, but their priest wouldn't come out there. So they got a Catholic priest to come and bless the house. But I guess it made the activity worse, to the point where the family didn't like when church and clergy came, because activity would always be worse after they left.
Oh.
And then, so it didn't just stick to knocking. Apparently, it would be like explosions that would shake the house. I think at one point I heard somewhere that they said, like, even like a seismologist, like someone to check for like earthquakes,
yeah,
came,
yeah,
in to test, and there was nothing. But then there would be like no signs of an actual explosion, but people would be knocked off their feet. They had another investigator who'd be there, and he would like sit there and have the recording going. The tape would almost run out, and so he'd go to switch the tape, and that's when the noises would start. And as soon as he got a new tape in,
it was done. Wow.
So then there were fires that started as well. The first one was a toilet paper roll spontaneously combusting when Mabel and Dwayne were in the house. Fire department came, and even in the report, it says there's no humanly possible reason for this to have started. There's no accelerant on it. Walls around it and everything were fine, but the toilet paper roll itself was just ashes.
That was it.
Nothing was damaged.
Wow.
At one point, they thought their barn was on fire. They saw smoke. They smelled smoke, but nothing was there. So they can't figure this out. Now, the worst fire, and I think eventually the family moves out, and I think this is what led to them moving out. Again, some of the timeline when they're talking between these got kind of confusing. But it happened in their main family room on Halloween of 1975. And they lost a bunch of, like, family pictures, heirlooms. Like, that's where they had a bunch of, I guess they lost a ton in that.
Sad.
And apparently the oldest, Dwayne, almost died in the fire. And I get a bit confused here, because in the show, Terry brings up Dwayne almost dying in the fire. And Dwayne comes around the corner, and he's pissed off that Terry's bringing it up. He's like, how would you like to hear it? I don't like to talk about that. Stop it. That's not yours to tell. So I don't really know what happened.
That seems like there's a little more there.
Oh, for sure. And we'll kind of get into that a bit more again. So that was the TV show, but then in the documentary, A Haunting on Dice Road, Hell House, there's mention of Dwayne having a grand mal seizure, but I don't think it was the same night. It didn't sound like it. It sounded like he maybe had a couple seizures, so I'll come back to that. Real quick, for those who maybe don't know, from the Mayo Clinic, a grand mal seizure causes a loss of consciousness and violent muscle contractions. It's the type of seizure most people picture when they think about seizures. Grand mal seizure is also known as a generalized tonic-clonic seizure. It's caused by abnormal electrical activity throughout the brain. Usually a grand mal seizure is caused by epilepsy, but sometimes the type of seizure can be triggered by other health problems, such as extremely low blood sugar, a high fever, or a stroke.
Okay.
So, now, in the documentary, after the family's cleared, there is one other explanation that Harold and a lot of the town people think is responsible for these occurrences. Because remember, the house was perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, in 1974, right before all of this happened, there was a new neighbor woman across the street, and she came over and told Harold she wanted to buy his property. He said, no, it's not for sale. You just bought this place. Like, why would you want this? Like, no. And then apparently a little while later, it doesn't really say, I don't know if it was a month, a week, what. Mm-hmm. But she comes back, and she's more adamant about buying the house. Harold said no again, and they got into an argument. Now, supposedly, this woman had told some people around town that she was a witch.
Okay. That was my first thought, was like, did she do something? Okay, keep going.
So they also say she had three big black X's above her garage door. And a priest told Dwayne that this was a sign of the devil. Now listen, I tried to Google three black X's for witchcraft, for Satanism, paganism, Wiccan, all the things. I couldn't really find anything about three black X's. Uh-huh. If someone out there is Wiccan, witch, any of those things, and has insight, I would love to hear if this is something you know, because clergy are not going to be conducive. Like, I personally, I won't lie, as a teenager, I looked up a lot of, I was very interested in the Wiccan faith. I grew up Catholic. I was going far away from it. Mm-hmm. So I find those religions very fascinating. I'm very interested in them. I never remember hearing anything about that. I know there is definitely power in threes. I mean, if anyone mm-hmm. watched Charmed, yeah. you know that. Yeah. So anyways, I looked it up. I didn't find anything, so I don't know for sure about three black X's. But supposedly she had them above her garage, and the priest said it was the sign of the devil. So Harold believed she did something and was the cause of all the problems. And one officer said that while he was outside there one time, he saw her dancing around a bush, and then when the knocking and pounding started, she went inside. Like, so mm-hmm. I assume he believed she was casting a spell.
I immediately was thinking of Game of Thrones, like a couple different times that they were doing weird things like that, and then things would happen. Like, oh, she's a witch.
So now, when Stephen and his team are investigating the house, they bring a psychic medium again this will be the first time, who says the spirit was brought into the home and that it was targeted specifically around the Pomerings. Everyone believed Dwayne was actually the main focus, and we'll kind of come back to that a little bit, but the psychic medium said that because there's a new family living in this house now, which we'll kind of come to later, like they talked about them in the beginning, but they've had some experiences, but not to this extent.
Mm-hmm. Why would you ever even move into a house that has that kind of history?
I have no idea. I don't think they somehow didn't know about it before. I don't know how that's possible, but
I asked my realtor when I moved into my house if they have to disclose that, and she said only in certain circumstances, and so
yeah,
I had asked her about that, and she's said plenty of weird things have happened in houses that she's
well, and I think these shown. People didn't, they weren't from this town when they moved here, yeah. I think, so they didn't know about it.
And if it was like back, yeah,
right, back, but maybe. The medium said that like it really wouldn't bother anyone but the Pomerings because of it was brought there and it was focused on them. So with them, the reason why they think it was focused on Dwayne was because despite the fact that he didn't like the neighbor lady and he stayed away from her, apparently there was an afternoon where she convinced him to come over and he was over there for several hours. Hmm. And Terry said that that afternoon when he came home, he seemed different, and that was the night of his first grand mal seizure. So they don't go back into whether or not, like, how many seizures he has and things like that. Later on, Terry mentions that Dwayne was never the same after all of this stuff happened and never really got his life together. And honestly, he was just thankful he was still alive.
Wow.
So they don't go into much to what exactly went on with Dwayne.
Yeah, that could be a whole separate thing.
But Dwayne says he can't really remember his time in the house except for the fact that it was filled with candles and strange symbols and the woman cutting a lock of his hair.
Okay.
So now, that's, I feel like, a pretty common knowledge. Like, movies, shows, right. You can Google. Like, yeah. That is something that, like, hair and stuff like that can be used in spells.
Hocus pocus. Hello.
Right.
Okay. On a lighter level here, we're going to go back there.
So, that's why they think Dwayne was kind of the focus of this. And apparently there's more, but again, I don't think they went fully into detail. Like, I'm assuming Dwayne didn't give his consent to let a lot of stuff about him be known. Yeah. And one other incident that was noted was a police officer mentioned to Harold that he had a friend who had extensive knowledge in the occult and he could maybe help. The officer and his friend came over and they pull out a Ouija board. Now, Harold being really religious isn't okay with that, mm-hmm. but at this point he's so desperate that he allows it to go forth. So they're all in the kitchen as this man is trying to communicate with the spirit. A knife comes out of the knife block and like is thrown across the room and mm-hmm. is embedded in the wall, barely missing this police officer.
Nope. Done. Bye. That's when you leave. Why? I don't understand this when people stay after things like this happen or continue to try to figure it out. Just go, you know?
Right. So now, during the course of the investigation, you know, Stephen and his crew, they catch a few things on camera. What appears to be a person outside, which they go to look for. They notice in this area that there's a ladder, and on the other side of up leaned up against the fence, and on the other side of a fence is like a cooler that could be stood on. So they think, okay, is someone coming in? But this was the same area that the police thought someone was coming from when this all initially happened. So they set up more cameras. They never saw evidence of anyone out there either, because it's also raining the night Steven and them do their investigation. There are no footprints.
Oh, weird.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing it's all like dirt and mud. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, like, in my mind, I mean, there's grass, but it's a farm. But there is, yeah, farm. you would have seen footprints. Yes. Like I said, I didn't find that this documentary had as much in the way of the investigation catching things as the second one did. Although Steven does use a Ouija board in the kitchen, which, again, he even says, he's like, I'm breaking one of the most cardinal rules of paranormal investigating by using a Ouija board. But he's like, I'm trying to kind of recreate the situation. And at one point, he's asking questions, but he said, do you want me to go? And the planchet is ripped from his hands and, like, flies at yes. And the planchet, for those of you who aren't aware of the Ouija board, is that kind of triangular-ish piece that you use.
The thing that
supposedly moves. Yes. Yeah. So he left. Now, they did find something pretty interesting during their investigation. Two men go into the crawl space. And as they're in there, one man, see, when they were in the bathroom with the medium, she was like, I feel like there are people coming up from the floor here. She's like, is there something under here? They're like, well, a crawl space. Now, one of the investigators has, it's not an EMF detector, but it's something similar to...
Mm-hmm.
Check that, and he says as he gets closer to the floor, it's spiking and there's no reason why it should. So he asks the guys down there, he's like, hey, can you come to where I'm at and see if there are wires?
Mm-hmm.
They go over there, they're like, no, there are no wires. Well, the guy under the ground, because they're crawling on like their stomachs, mm-hmm. in like mud,
yeah,
and the guy has his thing, he goes, it's coming from the dirt right here. And he's like, do you think the homeowners would care if I dug a bit? And the guy's like, well, if there's a live wire, like, right. We'd be doing them a favor. They're like, just be careful. So the man digs into this mud and finds a glass mason jar, like the kind you use for canning food. Mm-hmm. And he puts his little EMF detector over it, and it's the jar giving off this crazy reading.
Anything in the jar?
We'll come to that.
Okay. Sorry, I was just like, well, what else would, how would a jar do that? Okay.
So they bring the jar out.
Okay.
And they decide to open it. Because why wouldn't you?
Right.
The whole time I was thinking, why aren't you wearing gloves? Because right. Steven opens it and there's water in it and he dumps it into his hand and I was just gagging.
Gross. Gross.
But they find in it what's either cloth or paper. I feel like it had to have been some sort of treated paper or cloth because it's been in water and right. It's still intact.
Yeah.
Anyways, it's rolled up. There's like a like string around it tying it shut. So they get it untied. They open it. It's Harold's name with three black X's over his name.
What? Wow.
Yeah. That's one of the things I'm like, I'm going to have to go in and take a picture of my TV screen. Because I even tried like playing the show on my phone. I'm surprised
there's not, yeah, a picture of that
somewhere.
I
Google image search and yeah. I couldn't find it. But I tried to play the documentary on my phone and take a screenshot. Apparently your phone doesn't allow you to do that. It just makes a black screen.
Really?
I guess there's got to be some sort of technology thing. I don't know why, but
you
okay.
You should try it with something else. Did you try it on anything else? What if it was just that one?
Well, that's creepy. No, I didn't try it on anything
We're
else.
We're talking about creepy things, you know? I'm just saying you should have tried it on something happy. Like, what's that show that your daughter likes?
Listen, Bubble Guppies?
No, I know that one. The animal one. The little animals.
How many? Oh,
the baby. Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. I was like, listen, my daughter likes a ton of shows.
And about animals. Yeah. I was very specific.
Yeah. Tots on Disney.
Yeah. Not an ad also.
No. Oh my God. If Disney sponsored us, we'd be set.
Yes, please. I'll talk about anything for Disney.
So that was really eerie to me. Like that was the creepiest thing. Mm-hmm. And like, I don't know. I'm still a bit leery about the whole were they cursed thing.
I don't know. I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know where I sit on that. You know, like I believe that there are spirits and good and bad and like demons and that kind of thing. Like, I very much believe in that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Cursing wise, I don't know. I mean, it could be some dark.
I mean, who knows?
You know, I don't know. Yeah. And that's why I'm like, I don't want to be like, no, because
So who knows? So like I said, the new owners of the house, they have had some activity, but nothing to the extent that the Pomerangs had. Which could lead credence to the family having been cursed, and the spirit now, I guess, is just trapped there, but, like, they don't care about the this family because it's not the family they were meant to terrorize.
But if it was just... But what then, if it was the lady, the neighbor lady?
But my thing is, too, is, like, okay, so if she wanted this house and she wanted them out, it doesn't sound like she bought the house after they left.
Right. And does it ever mention her again?
No. And... no one mentions her name. Mm-hmm. One lady was like, I don't even remember her name now. And I'm like, how do you not remember the name of the woman who told you she was a witch?
Right. Unless they were like, would not, I don't know. She wouldn't like release the rights. I don't know.
So well, that's not public and knowledge. You can't too. She could have sued him for defamation probably or something. Yes. So they probably just left that out.
I mean, that's fine. I don't need to know who she is. I don't need to.
Yeah. So the things that the family has experienced was an unplugged radio turning itself on. Which I'd have been
I've heard things like that before happening, and that stuff freaks me.
Their water faucet turns on its own, which they did catch this on camera as they were investigating. Uh-huh. And like their daughters had mentioned seeing like glowing lights in the house, and then like even their granddaughter had mentioned it once before. And now when this couple's family, I think their name was Mike and Celeste. No, Mike and Celeste owned the other house. I can't remember the name of this couple.
The Sorry. New family?
Yeah, the family that lives in the Pomerang's house now.
I don't know. We'll just call them new family.
Yes. So their daughters, when they were teenagers, they were home alone and they were in their living room. There's this big bay window. And they said they saw a white face, like with its hands up by its face, like it's trying to peer in the window.
Yeah.
And then, so they called the neighbor
because
they were terrified and there was no evidence. And one of the things they catch on camera while there is it what looks like a face peering in. But, like, you can't, like, the face is so white, like, you can't make out features. Ooh. So, that's, I mean, the new family in there, like, it's not much. And they're like, it doesn't bother us, really. The daughters just want to know, kind of, like, what's going on there. But that's it. So it's hard to say, like, is this house, was it because of a curse? To me, something had to have happened, because if they were perfectly fine, why did it happen out of nowhere?
Right when this lady moved in,
kind of. But at the same time, again, we don't know much about the lady.
That's true.
Maybe something else happened. I don't know. It's hard to say.
Close to that other house too,
right? But then it's not bothering this family now,
and really his name specifically on that paper too. Oh, that stuff is very scary.
But then my question with that, and maybe there were updates that blocked it off or something, but like, how would she have gotten into their basement or like into their crawl space?
Right.
Because it was in their kitchen and there was like this specific area in the floor you'd have to remove to like crawl into. Yeah. But maybe she broke in when they were at church or something.
Maybe. Or was it always there? Not always there, but did it get put there?
Or did one of the family members do it? And was it really them? Like, did they somehow really cheat the system? But then this house is still haunted.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what I think about this house. I think there's activity there. I have no idea, though.
It seems like it was more of an attack on that family.
Yeah. It does. But I don't know why were they cursed. For me, there had to have been something that happened, whether it was this woman cursing them or something else within their life, their family, maybe someone close to them who didn't like them died and decided to annoy them while they were.
I don't know.
It's really hard to say. So now the parts, the cemetery and the bridge. Like I said, I tried to look up more. Again, these are all on this Dice Road. So there's something about Dice Road. I feel like Dice Road has to be on some sort of axis. Because it's dicey.
I said it before. I'll say it again. It is dicey.
I love me some dad jokes. But that one caught me off guard. Yeah. Out of left field.
Because it was kind of funny, huh?
So, well, it was something.
Yeah, okay.
So one of the main folklore for the cemetery that I found was that there was a woman named Anna Rhodes who received a letter stating that the ship her husband was traveling back home on sank and he died. And she lost it and took her own life.
Okay.
And then a few months later, he came back home because his ship actually hadn't. It just gotten delayed.
Ooh.
So now they say that, you know, she haunts this area, but apparently, or supposedly, this is folklore. I didn't really find a whole lot to substantiate this, so take it with a grain of salt, which can also keep spirits at bay.
Yeah, which is also...
If anyone watched ironic. Supernatural. But anyways, so the husband then said that she would visit him. And now at this point, he was ostracized from the community. I said that weird. He was...
Right, no, I knew.
Yeah.
It was fine.
Because the community thinks communing with spirits is devil work.
Right.
And because, like, he...
Did it say what year this was? I'm so sorry. You probably...
No, I don't know. I mean, sometime like, long ago.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I was like, well, obviously, if they're acting like,
in the 1800s, maybe?
Oh,
yeah.
Like, way back. Yeah.
Okay. And he never got remarried. They said he was so grief-stricken and he felt such guilt that he just never remarried and he just communicated with her ghost all the time. But apparently she still haunts the cemetery. Then, of course, you have the typical, oh, there were satanic rituals there. Mm-hmm. They say you can see spirits there of a bunch of people, which everyone thinks every cemetery is haunted.
I know. And I don't like that whole... I mean, some of them look creepier. Like, ones that are not taken care of and stuff, it just tends to be creepier.
I feel like there probably are some haunted cemeteries. Yeah. But listen, if I'm going to haunt a place, it's not going to be where my body's buried.
No, bye.
Which also... Well, maybe, because I want to be one of those trees, you know, where they cremate you.
Yes, I think that's really cool.
But I want to haunt the fuck out of that tree.
Yeah? Oh.
Yeah. I want people to come sit and be reading, and if they're reading a book I don't like, I want to, like, close it on them and stuff.
Oh. You're going to be a mean ghost.
No. I just want them to bring good books that I can still read, even in the afterlife.
You know, that's fair. Okay.
I mean, wouldn't it be fun?
I thought that was going, like, a sweet direction. I want to be a tree, and...
I mean, I want to be a tree so I can haunt people.
Yeah, okay.
Randos. I want people to sit under my tree and I want to mess with them.
Yeah, well, yeah, if there's people you don't like, especially, and they're still alive.
Yeah. Listen, I might.
Don't ever haunt me.
I might.
Don't haunt me.
Oh, I'm going to now. Anyways, so those are the main things about the cemetery.
Just for the record.
So now the bridge has a folklore of these three girls being murdered and hanged from the bridge. One story is that they made a wizard mad and he did it. Yeah. Another is just that, like, they were out there and some random person murdered them and hung them from a bridge. Now, people say if you're driving on this bridge, like, cars have been known to, like, stall and stop on the bridge. Their headlights dim and go out. Electronics, your phone, those types of things stop working. And, like, I guess you can hear the girls screaming.
This is weird. There's a place in Nebraska. I don't know. I can't remember what city or town, but they call it the Seven Sisters Bridge or Road.
Uh-huh.
And it's the same thing. They all were hanged. Hanged?
I think it's hanged.
Hanged in that this way off that a bridge as well. And they say the same thing. People have car problems on that road and hear the screaming.
There, so I don't remember where this is. We need
a whole episode on it, so I'll just throw that in there now.
There you go. My mom used to have these, like, tapes about different haunted places. I can't remember where this is, but there was a train track where this bus got hit and these children died.
Oh.
If you stop your car on the train tracks and you have, like, powder on your trunk, you'll see little hands because they push you off the train tracks.
Okay, find out where. That is the saddest, creepiest thing.
But sweetest,
but precious
too.
That they went. Oh my gosh.
I know. That's always stuck with me.
Seven Sisters Road. Sorry. It was... This is the one. It's in Southeast. Seven Sisters Road is Southeast in Nebraska City. That's it. Just the road that does the same thing.
Okay.
I just wanted to say where it was in Nebraska. Right. It doesn't need a whole episode. So there we go.
Okay. So then also there's a legend about Crazy Larry roaming the bridge, but I couldn't find anything about who Crazy Larry actually is. I don't know what that story is. If we have a listener who knows, I would love to hear. But that's the haunting on Dice Road in Merrill, Michigan.
Well, that's a pretty in-depth, creepy...
And I think possibly there are other haunted places in that town, because I think if you Google, like, Merrill, Michigan, it talks about how it's, like, has the most hauntings per capita, and it's only, like, a town of 700.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I don't know why people still live there then.
Yeah. And it's cold in Michigan, isn't it?
I have no idea.
I think it gets very cold.
Yeah, because it's up north.
Yeah. No. I mean, I've heard great things about it as well to anyone who lives there.
I don't know much about Michigan.
No.
But if you guys know more about this whole crazy Larry legend or anything else like please let us know. Also, yet again, we'd love to hear your suggestions, any of your paranormal experiences. If you know of haunted places in the Heartland that you want us to cover, we'd love the suggestions.
Mm-hmm.
Again, not just true crime. We like the paranormal as well.
Yeah, we're just trying out things and talking about all the different things to see what people like and
well, and it's about stuff that we like. And
yeah,
if you're listening to us, you probably like around the same stuff we like.
Totally.
So you can email us at heartland.darklandpodcast@gmail.com, or you can message us, get a hold of us on Instagram at heartland.darklandpodcast. Facebook is the same thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Twitter is HL_DL podcast.
Yeah. Which we'll have that all linked.
Yeah. It'll all be linked in the show notes as usual. Yeah.
So just check there.
Check there.
If you don't have a pen nearby.
Listen, I never have a pen. Well, I was just, that's how I found that book I want to read later.
Yeah. Which is nice, though, to have that mentioned. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And I'll link some
good articles.
Yeah. I'll link to the documentaries in the show notes as well.
Perfect.
For people who want to listen to that or watch that as well. Because I think they were interesting. Like I said, my favorite was personally Dead Town? Town of the Dead? The second one. It was Dice Road 2.
And that one's on Prime?
Amazon They're both Prime? On Prime,
okay.
Yes.
Okay, good, because I can watch
that. Yes. So with that, be Heartland kind,
but Darkland wary.